We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Right down the middle, Stephen. Can you believe it?
Oh my God! This is the Monday edition of College Sports Now. Roddy Jones, ACC Network, has turned into Ian Dark. He is commentating a penalty kick shootout between Japan and Croatia as we speak, which is about to be over because Japan's 0-2, Croatia's 2-2. Knockout rounds of the World Cup, man. I know you're living and dying with every game.
I did not watch much on Saturday other than the U.S., and then the game started. So I watched the U.S. Sad result for the United States. The boys just fell asleep defensively too many times. And with a team of that quality, you can't do that. But the orange, you know, it's fine. We can incorporate orange back into our overall culture. Yesterday, I didn't get to watch a lot on Sunday because we were driving back from Charlotte. Kept up with it, didn't get to watch a lot. But yeah, I've been tuned in, man. I'm excited to see Brazil play a little bit later. Neymar is supposedly supposed to play, so we'll see.
You're having some audio issues. Michael Cerber is not
yet
with
us. You're having some audio issues.
I am?
No.
You just sound a little hot. You sound a little overdriven.
Oh, okay. You want me to turn it down a little bit?
Oh, a little lifeline off the woodwork for Croatia.
Hey, you're ahead of me, man.
Hey, sorry. Listen, what do you want me to do, man? Get a better provider.
Not react?
How's that? Hang on. Now you're too low. Is this all in the show? Are we going to keep this in the show?
Yeah, let's keep it in the show.
All right. We'll just take people behind the curtain. I think
that's good.
That's better. Yeah, that's better.
All right. Am I still too loud?
No, you're good.
I'm going to get excited.
That's better. That's a lot better.
Excellent.
You can probably hear it in my voice. Your boy is... I'm gassed. I'm on fumes. I don't know how championship weekend treated you, Roddy, but I am actually excited that there's not going to be football coming up this weekend because I need a break. No disrespect to Army Navy, but I need a break. I'm cooked, man.
Brutal, man. Japan misses another one.
Now you're having internet issues. This is just great. This is spectacular. Roddy, you sound like you're underwater, man. You sound like you are literally under the sea. Oh, my goodness. I can't live like this. Mike Golic Jr. is going to join the show in about 15 minutes. There he is. He's back.
Oh, did I drop out?
Yeah, you dropped out, man. You sounded like you were in the ocean.
I'm hardwired in, too.
You are now because you were on wireless.
No, I've been hardwired.
Well, there were issues. Croatia's into the semifinals, folks. Or quarterfinals, excuse me. They are into the quarterfinal round over Japan in penalty kicks. That has gone final. South Korea and Brazil still to come later today. Big game in my household. Big game. This is the worst start to a show we've ever had. This is worse than the time that Roddy started reading through the AP preseason college basketball rankings. This is worse than that. Roddy's had microphone issues. Now he's had internet issues. We're 4 minutes into the show, and it's been an absolute disaster, just an abject failure. Mike Golic Jr. will join the show in 15 minutes from now. We'll get Golic's thought on the college football playoff. The Final Four is set. Michigan, TCU in the Fiesta Bowl, Georgia, Ohio State in the Peach Bowl. That will be the order of things on New Year's Eve. Michigan, TCU set to go at about 4 o'clock Eastern. Ohio State and Georgia will kick in Atlanta at about, let's say, 8 o'clock Eastern time, probably closer to like 8:15. So if you missed it over the weekend, Roddy is restarting his computer because apparently things on his end have gone south in a big way. You had some surprises. Utah beating USC, the manner in which they did. Caleb Williams gets hurt. SC's offense is non-existent with their quarterback dinged up. Utah goes at SC with a pair of pliers and a blowtorch. 47-24, Utes get the win. Back-to-back Pac-12 champs for Utah. Not going to lie, was communicating with some Georgia fans on Friday night about the notion of, would you rather have gotten USC or would you rather get Ohio State in the Final Four? I don't think Georgia fans are thrilled that they have to see Ohio State. We'll talk about that throughout the show. We'll talk about it for the next couple of weeks, obviously. But Ohio State, maybe Jackson Smith and Jigba comes off the bench. We haven't seen him since September. He's been nursing a hamstring injury. Maybe he plays. Does Ohio State come out with their hair on fire? Does it matter? Can anybody give Georgia a game? These are all questions that we will discuss over the next couple of weeks as we get ready for December 31st when the college football playoff gets underway. But SC goes down in dramatic fashion, and instead of going to the playoff, the Trojans have to go to the Alamo Bowl. Is it the Alamo Bowl? No. Goodness gracious. Bowl prep. Stand by. Washington's going to the Alamo Bowl. Where is USC going? Oh, they got to get Tulane in the Cotton Bowl. That's their consolation prize. They get the mighty green wave of Tulane. Tulane knocks off UCF in the American Athletic Championship. Good for the wave. They get to punch their ticket as the highest-ranked Group of Five team, but they get a Trojans team that is going to be banged up. You wonder if a guy like Jordan Addison even plays in this game for obvious reasons. We're going to have so many guys sitting out of these bowl games, even the New Year's Six games. It's going to be crazy, and quite frankly, it's borderline reckless to even talk about some of these bowl matchups because so many guys are going to be sitting out over the next couple of weeks and announcing that they're just not going to be playing. I believe Roddy Jones has rejoined the program.
What have you been doing the last 5 minutes?
Just been recapping conference championship weekend, buddy. Just been talking ball.
Figured you'd stop and we would start the show over again.
That's okay. You're with us now. I want to know how conference championship weekend treated you. You were in Charlotte. I was in Atlanta. We both watched the Pac-12 championship game on Friday nights from our respective hotels. I was talking to the audience about SC basically getting blown up by Utah. And obviously the Trojans were injured. Caleb Williams, you hate to see it, was dealing with some lower leg stuff. He was clearly not 100%.
That was a hammy.
Maybe not even 50%, to be honest with you. But I thought Utah was impressive. You got to tip your cap to Kyle Whittingham. Back-to-back Pac-12 champs. That's a big deal. Georgia blew out LSU. The game of the week was probably in Arlington. Kansas State TCU, 31-28 in overtime. Horned Frogs get the loss, but they still go to the CFP, and they don't move from that 3 seed. But take a step back, because we got weeks to talk about the CFP matchups. We got weeks to break down these bowl games. What did you make of conference championship weekend, Roddy?
I thought in large part it was good. I mean, it was conference championship weekend. Look, the USC-Oregon thing, I'm sorry, the USC-Utah thing, not Oregon. I've got Oregon on the brain because Utah kicked their ass twice last year.
Yeah, they did.
As well. Look, Kyle Whittingham has built something there where if you're not built a certain way and you got to be built different, you're going to get your ass exposed against Utah. You can't play, like, even if Caleb Williams is healthy in that game, it doesn't matter. Utah's going to boat race him because Utah plays with a physicality and with a mentality that is hard to match over the course of 60 minutes. And do they get beat? Yes, they do get beat at times. But when it matters and when there's things on the line, Utah's played as well as anybody in the country the last couple seasons. So what they've done is incredibly impressive, and I thought their performance in that game really showed what a good place that program is in. So Deion Sanders, like, you ain't playing Alcorn anymore. You're playing Utah, and it's a little different.
We'll talk about Coach Prime a little bit later. I'm fascinated by that. Coach Deion Sanders is now in Boulder, Colorado, for those of you that haven't been keeping up with these things.
In terms of the Big 12, look, TCU's been living on a razor's edge for forever, man. And they had to come back in that game, and they were able to do it. And then going for it on fourth and goal from the one in overtime, that's who they are. So anybody who says anything different, just give them a little slap on the face and tell them that they're stupid and tell them to go away. Like, the people who are all of a sudden like, they should have taken the points. Get the hell out of here, man. Nobody in the country is kicking. Well, that's not true. There are some people, but they're yellow bellies. The yellow bellies. Yeah. The coaches with any sort of gumption, like, there's no coach with any gumption that's kicking a field goal, fourth and goal from the one in overtime. This is not going to happen. Because honestly, like, you are one Deuce Vaughn handoff away from that game being over if you kick a field goal. I mean, look what Deuce Vaughn did. Deuce Vaughn made a TCU player sit his ass down into the portal. I don't know if that guy's in the portal. I don't think he is. But he needs to be, because he sat his ass down late in the game, very publicly. You can't do that. That man has a family. So
if we treated football games like the N1 mixtape tour, that TCU defender would have had to have left the game. He would have been laughed off the field. Like, sorry. You're done participating.
Goodbye. Yep. So I thought that game was definitely the most entertaining. It was bananas. It was back and forth, and it was a lot of fun. The other games were pretty underwhelming, including like the under the radar ones. Like, even the group of five games were not very good by and large.
Well, let's talk about the game you saw. You were in Charlotte. By the way, Michael Serber has entered the chat. He is with us. Everybody's running around with their hair on fire a little bit today.
Congratulations, El Serberino.
Yep. Serber's an ACC champion.
That is not what I get congratulations for. What I get congratulations for is they replaced the power pole in my yard this morning. And when they did it, there was a tree sort of in the way. I told the boys, I was like, well, you have my permission to do whatever you need to do to that tree, because it's one I was going to pay to have cut down anyway, and they cut it down for free.
What kind of wood? Hang on a second. What kind of wood?
This is just like a Bradford pear. It's not a Bradford pear, but it's like a similar ilk. You know what I mean?
There's no firewood to be claimed from this fallen tree.
Well, no, hang on. This tree will be contributing to the firewood. I'm not a hardo when it comes to what type of firewood I have here. Like, if it burns, if it makes fire, if I can do the Tom Hanks thing from Castaway with it, then it works for me. I'm not really picky.
What is the best wood that you would cut down for firewood, Steven?
That would be oak.
Yeah, oak.
Oh, okay.
Oak is the heaviest wood. It's the densest. I mean, it's a slow-burning, smoke-free wood. Yeah, it's like ideal.
Like, what you don't want is like maple or any type of like pine.
Yeah.
They're not great for burning. Yeah. It stinks. They hold a lot of moisture, so they don't burn really well.
That makes sense, because like there's this little firewood like house down the street from me, and I think they just take the pine trees from around the city and turn them into logs.
Yeah. Also, cedar. If you can get your hands on some cedar, it burns quick, but it is. I mean, it's spectacular.
The thing about cedar is it's a pricey wood because it's desirable for using for construction and building projects. It's got a great look to it. So it's not ideal for burning because it's so useful for other things. And the same could be said for oak, frankly. But there's so much oak, too. That's the thing. Like, everyone has an oak tree in their yard.
I don't know that at least one. I do.
I take that back, depending on when your house and neighborhood were built and things like that and the landscaping choices that were made. But for the most part, if you have a place that's been around for like 50-60 years and you haven't cut a ton of trees down, or the previous owner didn't, you probably have an oak in your yard because
they
last
forever. We
have
a giant tree in our front yard, and I'm not sure if it's an oak or not. I think it's a poplar tree.
Why don't you take a picture of it during a commercial break, and Serber and I will tell you what kind of wood you got.
Okay.
Yeah, show us your wood, dude.
Yep. It's not weird at all. Can we talk about the Cade Klubnik era, which is off and running?
Let's do it.
DJ Uiagalelei has entered the portal, as reported on College Sports Now, probably 4 weeks ago. We told you this was going to happen.
You didn't report it. You speculated 4 weeks
but,
ago.
I mean, we saw the future, like Rostradamus. We see the future. We tell you what's going to happen before it happens. So DJ gets the start. He gets yanked. Cade Klubnik comes in and looks like Joe Montana. 20 of 24, 279, outplays Drake May. UNC scores first. They lead 7-0, and then it's 39-3 thereafter. Tigers roll. And by the way, can we agree that if Clemson hadn't messed around and lost to South Carolina, that the Tigers would be in the playoff?
Yes, they would.
Hate to see it. Yeah, you hate to see it.
Get him, Roddy, though. It's not fair what, like, the outplayed Drake May thing.
The Drake May thing you did.
Drake May didn't get to play against his own defense. So
right. Yes, correct.
So where am I wrong then?
Well, no, you are not completely incorrect. You are lacking the necessary touch or nuance that is due the situation. Drake May is a better quarterback than Cade Klubnik, playing with a much worse supporting cast.
Okay.
And certainly playing against a much better defense than Cade Klubnik, which, by the way, I've come on this podcast and many other shows and publicly said that Wes Goodwin has not done a spectacular job with that defense. I thought he did a great job at that defense in that game. They switched the structure of the defense. They played Wade Wood as almost like an Isaiah Simmons role. They went to a three down lineman structure. They three linebackers, more defensive backs. Like I thought what he did, or the different structure on the defensive back, basically a three safety system. I thought what he did there was excellent. And it was similar to what NC State, similar to the structure that NC State runs, similar game plan to what NC State did. When you blitz, blitz enough where you know you're going to get to Drake May. And when you drop, drop enough people where you know there ain't going to be nowhere to throw the ball. And that's basically what they did. And then, by the way, like that Clemson defensive line, like they have not been Georgia from last year. But damn it, when they put it together, they are really, really good. So had, you know, had Dabo Swinney, when DJ Uiagalelei was 6-for-20 against South Carolina, had he made the decision to go to Cade Klubnik, they're probably in the top four. But he did it in the ACC championship game, and there you go.
Hang on. See, this is what I don't like. I watched every single Clemson game this year. I watched every single time that Cade Klubnik went into the game. I don't, like, yeah, they gave him a shot in the ACC championship game, and he capitalized. He didn't look like that any other time.
Correct.
No, that is correct. But he also came in and just didn't mess up the Syracuse game. He
right.
also came
it's
in.
It's easy
and,
to hand
and,
like, the ball off.
Yeah, no, you're right. But like DJ could
he
not complete.
Bad passing
hold on,
the ball.
Hold on. DJ could not complete. Not really. Like the Notre Dame situation was an awful situation to be put in. He was playing twiddly sticks on the sideline 1 minute, and the next minute Isaiah Foskey's bearing down on him as he's rolling towards his non-dominant side. I would short circuit too and probably throw it to whoever I saw. And yeah, he threw a pick six. That's not great. But he's a true freshman. And as did he look great at any other point in time that season? No. But DJ could not complete a pass against South Carolina. Couldn't even give his receivers a chance. And yes, there were some drops in that 6-for-20 and eventual 8-for-29. But like, what if Cade had come in that situation and over the next eight passes been 4-of-8? That would have been a revelation to that game.
Sure. What I don't like is the narrative that's now being completed that's like Dabo's an idiot. He should have done this weeks ago. And it's like, no. He tried to do this multiple times. It did not work out any of the times. And I'll grant you the Notre Dame one was the one where it's like Cade probably should have gotten a few more shakes at it considering the one you gave him. He was inside his own 10-yard line. And I'm not saying that you're doing this, Roddy. I'm not saying that at all.
No,
there are a lot of lazy takes out there that are
like, look,
Dabo should have done this. It's like, okay, you didn't watch the games. You're trying now to pretend that you watched the games. I know, Roddy, you did. Hartzell watched a lot of them as well. That's just my only issue. The other thing is, like, this worked out for the best because, honestly, Clemson now gets to go to the Orange Bowl to play a Hendon Hooker-less Tennessee team in a game that they could potentially win, as opposed to the college football playoff, in which they would get pantsed by every single team that is in it.
That's correct.
So yeah, I'm not true. As a Clemson fan, and I think most Clemson fans, rational Clemson fans, which there aren't a ton of, which there's not a ton of any college fan base with rational fans, hopefully realize that, like, oh, shit, we won 11 games, the ACC championship. Yes, we lost to South Carolina for the first time in 8 or 9 years, but we also are now not, hopefully not, going to get pantsed in the Peach Bowl or the Fiesta Bowl by teams that are head and shoulders above us, which the teams that are in the playoff, I think, based on what I've seen, are head and shoulders above Clemson. Even USC.
TCU is not.
Maybe USC's TCU isn't, it, but I think Max Duggan would throw it all over our secondary. Yep. That's just me.
Not the way Nate Wiggins is playing. And also, I think that part of the being in the playoff is not necessarily just the game. Yeah, the game probably wouldn't go well if you get on as a four seed and you're playing Georgia. But if you but you're being talked about for a month in a way that Clemson's not going to be talked about. So I do think there is part of that to go along with the, hey, you know, what would happen in the game. I would like to say on the DJ thing, on the DJ Cade thing, I think a lot of stuff can be true. I think Cade probably wasn't ready for the majority of the season for whatever reason. I don't want to speculate as to that, but he's a true freshman, and a lot of time true freshmen aren't ready to play quarterback at the college level. B, and as part of A, DJ probably gave them the best chance to win the game, win games for most of the year, because he could get you into the right play and generally, like, could make you function like an offense should, snapping the ball before the play clock expires, sending the motion when the motion needs to be sent, communicating and getting you into the right protection against the right and the right play, and making decent decisions on post-snap decisions, on plays that have post-snap decisions, whether it's throwing the ball, finding the right person to go to, or whether it's an RPO. So I think DJ probably did all that well. The thing that is a criticism of Dabo is based on what Cole Turner did in that championship game and based on what Cade Klubnik did in that championship game, why am I just now seeing that? Why? Because it's not like the other receivers were any good consistently. Bo Collins was the best receiver over the course of the year, and his absence was not missed at all. And with the performances that DJ had down the stretch, and I'm not just talking about a performance against South Carolina that was not only
the last four or five games. Yeah.
Correct. It was South Carolina. It was Miami. Louisville was fine, I guess, and Notre Dame was not good either. So Syracuse, like the latter half of the season with all of those performances, why wasn't this plan enacted sooner? So that is what I lay at Dabo's feet. I should have seen more Adam Randall. I should have seen more Cole Turner, and I should have seen more Cade Klubnik, because like what Cole Turner did in that game, catching that pass deep down the field, just the way that it looked, there's not a single other receiver on that roster that I've seen that from this year.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do we agree, by the way, just real quick, we're waiting for Mike Golic Jr. to join us. He might be dealing with some technical issues. Do we agree, though, that DJ hitting the portal is the right call here? I mean, for that young man's career? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. It's like DJ hitting the portal is like Scott Satterfield going to Cincinnati. It's best for everybody.
Yeah, because it ain't going to work out here.
Well, I don't know about that with Louisville, but they wanted the hell out of there.
I mean, that guy, he was on borrowed time. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, they were going to get rid of him as soon as they could. When we get to this, I don't want to have this conversation now, but I do want you guys' perspective on like what should the expectations for Louisville be, because I think it's kind of one of those programs that got a little inflated by catching stuff at the right time, and now they think they should be something that I'm not sure they can be.
That's fair. Yeah. Listen, I love having discussions about programs where the fan base thinks there's something that they're not. I mean, if Louisville thinks that they're Clemson, they are not. But then again, you should be better than 7-5.
Should you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Why?
I think so.
Why should Louisville be better than 7-5?
Yeah. It's not the case anymore. Hartzell, I see your point 10 years ago when they were head and shoulders above everyone else with facilities because they made those huge investments. But everyone's caught up and past them now.
Well, and the other
and they
thing
don't
is,
they don't have that chip to play. They have no chips to play, frankly.
Through the success, the big success that they had in the early 2000s, they were in Conference USA in a Big East that had already been ravaged and lost Virginia Tech and Miami. So, yeah, they were able to string together some success at the end of that run, at the very beginning of their run in the Big East, and then at the end of their run in the Big East, the first under Bobby Petrino, the second run under Charlie Strong, but that was a ravaged Big East. And then, yes, they had success at the beginning of the ACC era, part of that with Lamar Jackson, a generational quarterback talent.
Yes.
So, like, when you take those two things into account and you look at it, like, should Louisville have expectations? I would say probably, but like, what are they? 9-10 wins every year?
How about, I'm not saying you need to be flirting with the college football playoff, or I'm not saying that you should be winning the ACC. I'm saying some of the losses, some of the inconsistencies the last couple of years under Satterfield, I mean, you can't be losing to Boston College. You can't be getting blown out by your in-state rival every year. Like, that's where we are with Kentucky football.
The last part is fair, but Mark Stoops has built something at Kentucky there with resources that Louisville just doesn't have. And the other part of it is, I mean, Louisville's kind of operating at a place, to me, where they have to go everywhere else to get talent. And if you're not able to do that consistently, I don't know. Louisville's one I struggle with because they have great facilities. They're in a place they can go to Ohio. There's a pipeline to Florida that they've always been able to take advantage of and sort of find underrated prospects. And there's no academic restrictions to get people in. So you should be good. But, like, I don't know.
Hey, by the way,
facilities are nice.
Roddy, ACC Network guy, what's Louisville's men's basketball team's record right now?
I think they're 0-9.
They're 0-8, big fella.
0-8, yeah.
Louisville men's basketball has lost to Lenoir Rhine, Chaminade, Bellarmine? Whatever. Wright State, App State. Get you some of that. Louisville basketball, deep, dark places. Let's check in with Mike Golic Jr. He joins us on the show. Mike, were you having connection issues? I kept seeing you jumping in and jumping out. Where are you at, dude? Oh, boy.
There you go.
Oh, boy.
You really hate to see it.
Yeah, you really hate to see it. You hate to see it.
It is true.
Maybe he's locked in on the World Cup. Maybe he's...
How are you going to handle that coming up here at 2 o'clock, Hartzell?
I've got my South Korea jersey on. I'm wearing it loud and proud, and I am fully prepared to lose 1-0 to Brazil. I believe Mike Golic Jr. has entered the chat. No, he's gone away. Oh, my God. You hate to see it.
You really do.
I'm struggling.
This is not good.
Server, you were not around for the first 5 minutes of the show.
Your boy had some issues.
Roddy was doing play-by-play of the Japan-Croatia penalty kicks.
Oh,
he was having audio issues. He had to restart his computer.
Wow. That's true.
All of these things happened within the first 5 minutes of the show, and you weren't here, you know, to kind of help me.
I'm sorry about that.
Hello, Mike.
Yeah, God, guys, I'm sorry. I'm really good at technology, if you can't tell.
I'm worried about you, man. Are you okay?
Oh, man, you know what, guys? The first weekend that I don't travel in 13 weeks and I just completely forget how to function on the other side. It's like if I don't go towards a plane, I'm somehow losing my strength like Superman in the sun.
How did you consume championship weekend? Did you just put a dent in the couch and just, like, eat yourself into oblivion? Like, how did you get down?
No, I went, I took myself out to a little public watering hole. There was a couple of spots over near the pier by where I live that were showing all the games and all the fine TVs they had. And so I got taken in with the people. It was a good time.
I bet it was a good time. The pure way. By the way, Mike is a Los Angeles resident now, so no, we can't all live by the pier. But Mike, what was your big takeaway from championship weekend? Like, obviously the big talking points are what happened in the Pac-12 and the Big 12. But what was your big takeaway?
My big takeaway was I am kind of bummed that, because again, I don't want to take anything away from what Utah did. They physically wore USC out, but there is part of me that was bummed that Caleb Williams and that hamstring become such a big part of that game, because for detractors, they're going to be able to point to that and say that that was a huge part of why Utah was able to stymie USC on defense, but also part of me just wanted the potential of seeing the Heisman Trophy winner go up against Georgia's defense. I don't think it would have gone well for USC, but I think it would have been really interesting to watch that happen, and I was kind of bummed that that didn't happen and that ended up coming to pass, but as much as anything, too, I was proud that the committee didn't get in their own way and subvert their own happiness. TCU losing in a barn burner of a game should always have had this outcome. It shouldn't have mattered. We talked about this last week that they should have been in even with one loss on their schedule, and I was just surprised to see and pleasantly surprised the committee do the right thing again.
So did they get it right with Ohio State coming in at 4 in your mind?
Yeah, they didn't have a choice. Like this, I mean, God, and Ronnie, you can speak to this. Over at the ACC Net, Clemson folks have to be in shambles today. Absolute shambles. Because if you just make the quarterback switch you made in the ACC championship game in that South Carolina game, we're talking about Clemson playing in the college football playoff. That's not like an if or a maybe. That's a certainty. If they don't lose to South Carolina and they go blow the doors off of North Carolina like they did in the ACC championship game, one loss conference championship Clemson is getting in over Ohio State.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And look, it's going to be the thing that we talk about for a few years, because this is like Dabo was loyal. And then eventually he was so loyal that it cost them a spot in the college ball playoff. And then when they make the switch, it looks like he's got the next coming of Joe Montana at quarterback. So, it is what it is. You live and you die by it.
The frustrating part for me is we've seen him make that move before. Like,
I know.
He made the quarterback switch before. He's got that dog in him, and he didn't let it out of the cage here, and I don't know why.
Well, and he tried it earlier in the year. Like, if you did it against Syracuse and Notre Dame, why didn't you do it against South Carolina? Because you thought he was going to throw a pick? Well, the other guy couldn't complete a pass, period, so how much worse could it be? But anyway, that's neither here nor there. I want to go to the SEC championship game and the Big Ten. Obviously, two dominant performances by those two teams. However, Kirby Smart, his defense gave up a lot of yardage. And while that game never felt like it was close, LSU did move the ball to the tune of 549 yards for a 502 of that through the air. Is this the best case scenario for Georgia? Because they put up 50, they win by 20, but they give up so many yards that he's going to light a fire under the ass of the best defense in the country.
100%, Roddy. Like, as soon as I saw ESPN doing that wraparound coverage, where I believe it was Laura Rutledge that was over with the Georgia crew, and she pointed that out, that Kirby Smart, one of the bullet points they flashed up on the screen was not our defensive standard. And I said, oh boy, the next month is about to be hell for these young men. Like, Kirby gets 15 of those bowl practices across that entire time to remind them that they're not worth you know what. They're going to hear it from him every which way. And so, yeah, that's everyone's worst nightmare, because this is already the team. It is Georgia versus the field. That is the college football lot in life we've arrived at. And the last thing you want, much like what used to be Nick Saban's Alabama teams, when given even the smallest slight to weaponize into an advantage or some sort of underdog mentality, now you got that for Kirby, and that's not a good thing for anyone.
Let me ask you this, though, Mike, because I talked to a couple of Georgia fans over the weekend. They were not, obviously it hadn't been finalized as of Saturday or even Friday night, but they were not thrilled about the notion of having to face Ohio State in a semifinal. Do you think the Buckeyes will give Georgia a game? Can anybody give Georgia a game, but can Ohio State give Georgia a game?
Ohio State's absolutely capable of that. Like, to be clear, and then that's why Georgia fans are smart. They understand that, all right, between Ohio State and between TCU, the team with comparatively more offensive firepower and NFL talent, which is what Georgia, like, you need to be successful against Georgia, right? You need guys that move and look like their guys. And Ohio State's got a lot more of those guys than most of the other programs they would have been able to face. And so, yeah, I think they're understandably looking at them as a threat, even though Georgia is just Giga Michigan. Like, everything that Michigan does well, Georgia just does better and meaner. And so for Ohio State, it's all the same bad matchups in the same bad places, particularly in the middle of lines of scrimmage, that Michigan provided you, just without some of the rivalry built into that that we know can do weird things to people's brain chemistry.
Yeah, and instead of having a 19-year-old quarterback, you have a 29-year-old quarterback operating the show with Stetson Bennett instead of J.J. McCarthy on the other side. Oh, and by the way, Georgia's healthy at running back, so there's that.
Not good.
Let's talk about Michigan, because Blake Corum obviously isn't going to play, but Donovan Edwards has looked great during his time. I mean, they're going to be favorites against TCU. Coming out of the Big Ten championship, like, what's your major level of concern for Michigan? Maybe not in the semifinals, but just overall in general, where do you point out and say, yeah, that's the place they could get exposed?
Well, yeah, listen, as much as it showed up against Ohio State, and I think it's because Ohio State so clearly sold out, and we're like, we're going to make sure that Michigan can't run the football. And J.J. McCarthy's like, all right, I'll just hit more big plays in one game than we've hit all season through the air. I think that would be the area that if I'm Michigan, I'd be most concerned about. Because really, for them now, Michigan's out here slaying demons. This has been the last couple of seasons. And Georgia now represents the final boss for that. They were the team that ushered them out of the semifinal last year. And I think this season, it's a lot of the same issues where, all right, if you're Michigan, can you do that consistently against a defense that's better than Ohio State's? That's the standard that's quite literally built to stop pretty much anything from spread offenses like Tennessee's that go up tempo that you can lighten up the box with, to a team like Michigan, where if you want to load that up, they've got big bodies and depth of big bodies and maybe the most destructive player in college football when healthy in Jalen Carter in the middle of that defensive line that are going to attack you right at the thing that you feel like you do best. And I think there's always something to that, right? Because when Michigan beats Ohio State, or when Michigan would beat Michigan State, and you attack a team's weakness, it's one thing. When you're Georgia and you go directly at the strength, that's like, you remember in Avengers, the Endgame, when all of a sudden you have Thanos boxing the Hulk, and he just hand-to-hand whoops that man's ass. That's what Georgia did to Michigan last year, and that's the most demoralizing thing possible, is when you think you've got a strength and someone else outstrengths your strength, and that's what Georgia poses for a team like Michigan.
I'm curious, while we're talking Michigan, Mike, do you agree with the odds makers? Wolverines about a 9.5-point favorite over TCU. You think the Horned Frogs can keep it close, or do you anticipate that's a lopsided affair?
No, I think TCU's actually got what it takes to keep it close. I was really interested. I went back and rewatched the Big 12 championship game. And, man, for how much Kansas State's offense had success, it wasn't because they were out-physicaling TCU at the line of scrimmage. And I think I have a great amount of respect for Kansas State's offensive line. I think that's a really good unit that's played really solid football and been a part of why they've won all year long. But TCU won the day on the line of scrimmage. They were resetting the ball. Demonic Williams, their true freshman nose guard, was giving them all they could handle in the middle of that line. And so I think they're ready for the physical challenge. That's a big physical team up front on both sides. They're experienced in those areas. Quentin Johnston, when healthy, you saw it. That's a full-blown dude. And so, no, I think they'll be able to keep it healthy. Michigan, absolutely rightly the favorite. I think it might be a little bit closer than that just because how both these teams want to play football at first glance right now. But now TCU is capable of holding their own. I don't think they're going to win the title, but I think they're capable of holding their own in the semi.
And if he has to, Max will teach you how to dug in, teach you how to dug in. Wow. Down the field.
Oh,
it
no.
Wasn't.
Yeah,
he's been there forever, and it's my first chance that I've gone all in on them. That was bad. I'll see myself out now. Yeah. Mike, I got to ask you about the coaching situation, carousel, all of this stuff. Look, the big news is Deion Sanders going to Colorado. And while I don't necessarily want to start here with that, like, how do you think this thing's going to go? Because it's a polarizing hire.
Yeah, you know what? In the press conference clips that we all saw yesterday and him addressing the team are kind of the perfect encapsulation of this, right? Is I don't actually think a lot of what he said and did at the start of this is that far off of what most normal coaches would say. Like, if you take away all of the bravado and wanting to cut a wrestling clip, what he did was came in and said, we're going to try and reset the culture around here. The transfer portal is open for business, and in modern college football, we've seen if you're a new coach going in and you want to get good in a hurry, you pop that thing open and let it be known to everyone. And so it was great advertising for that. And it was, hey, this is going to be our standard, and if that's something you want to be a part of, great. We are going to bring in competition. If not, there's the door. But when it comes with all the things that we know, Deion's going to drop bars about Louis luggage and all those things in there. It's different enough because it's Deion, because everything he does is big in prime time, that we're all going to look at this kind of sideways. But the notion of a star head coach or a head coach who wants to be the story to school, that's college football. College football loves making the head coaches the center of how we talk about these teams. And so I have no idea how it's going to go from a resources standpoint. standpoint, because we already saw that Colorado's paying off one credit card with another to try and make this contract even happen. So I really have no clue how it's going to go from that standpoint, but Deion's going to advertise and make this program look important to people that are going to potentially tune into this. And I think to some extent to players, we've already seen certainly some interest peaked, even using social media anecdotally as the portal cracked open today.
Colorado here running an athletic department like I run my personal finances. Just give me another credit card, bro.
It was the Kevin Hart line, right? See, the way my bank account is set up, I had a checkings and a savings.
I don't have the money yet, but I will have to have the money at some point, so it'll be all right. Like, we'll be good.
that was to me, like, in all of, well, first off, I want to run two things by you guys, because one, that was the wildest thing that came out of yesterday's proceedings to me, was Colorado was essentially like, yeah, we're a little broke, like, we're not all the way broke, but we're a little broke right now, and we're gonna get right. Ski mask season is around the corner. But the only other thing that shocked me more than that, and it was a reminder that Deion Sanders, for all of the stuff that we talk about him being a news, he's a old school coach in his approach. Did you catch the guy who was the author of the look good, play good, pay good, whatever good quote, tell people that there were going to be no hats and earrings inside the facility and in the meetings? Was I the only one that was a little caught off guard by that?
Wow. I did miss that. I did not see that. I did see that he said the team was going to be opening doors for old ladies, and that he named his son the starting quarterback, but then said he was going to have to work for it and compete for the job, but he was going to be the starter.
He messed up the order on that.
I think he looked directly at a player who had earrings in while he said it, too. He's like, we ain't wearing earrings when we get in here.
Oh, and let me tell you what, Roddy, like, we played in an era where that was just kind of like, we hadn't had the conversations like we did around Iowa, where we pointed out that a lot of those are like racially charged policies and all that. And so now you've got Deion saying it, and then you've got all of us who have like anxiety as like PTSD holdover from when we were players, because I did the same thing. I looked at that group of players sitting there and I went, one guy's slouching, one guy's got his hood up, there's a kid that's got a hat on in there. He mentioned you better not have your cell phone. Like, I don't know about you, Roddy, I never had my cell phone within a country mile of a team meeting. My station in life was never secure enough to where I could have the audacity to potentially have that thing go off in a meeting. And so all of that gave me anxiety as I grappled with how wild it was that Deion Sanders, of all people, was like, we are not going to be flashy and individualistic in our approach.
Deion Sanders, like Kirk Ferentz says, hey, no hats, no earrings, and you're right, and no wife beaters. And it does feel very racially charged. And then Deion Sanders says it, and we're like, oh, discipline, because he's playing Young Thug as he says it.
That was my other favorite thing that came out of yesterday, is everyone remixing the videos, because they're like, Deion's not going to be able to go the play my music thing at Colorado. Like, is Mr. Brightside going to start playing when he hits that from a Colorado band? Go ahead and hit my music.
The chains
coming out,
baby,
of my cage. And I'm
the backseat of your Rover, your roommate back in Boulder. We ain't never getting older.
I didn't even think of the Boulder time. You realize, by the way, this is the reverse Brian Kelly, right, as far as a culture fit?
Yes.
Oh, 100%. He just went to the whitest place in America and is like, what's his recruiting pitch going to be? Like, hey, come play for Deion, and also, weed's legal.
Yeah. Hey, you, by the way, not going to get you for that. I know we might drug test in air quotes, but don't worry about that. We got
you'll
you.
You'll be good. We got
terrible
you.
Pitch, Roddy. Honestly.
I mean, it's you're yeah,
it's
you're
not
right.
A terrible pitch. Yeah. That's the thing. Boulder's a beautiful place. But culturally, Mike, you're dead on, man. Like, this is the opposite of Brian Kelly. 180 degrees.
I did appreciate, too, that when Deion was selling it, he's like, this is a great campus, a beautiful town, there's no crime. I'm like, man, he's really scraping the barrel for nice things to say about Boulder. Damn.
Or he was shocked coming from Jackson, Mississippi at the lack of police.
Yeah. He's like, I haven't seen a cop in miles. What do you got? Like, what, do you guys pay them?
Mike, what's your thoughts? Like, this is the last one for me, but like bowl season, you know, all these matchups, the fact that so many kids are either hitting the portal or they're going to make a business decision and not play in these games. Like, how different has your perspective on bowl season? How much has it changed from where it was like 5, 10 years ago?
Yeah, oh, it's a massive shift. And I think part of it, there's an interesting opportunity because you're right. I mean, I think a lot of people around, like even like using my alma mater, like Notre Dame's playing South Carolina in the Gator Bowl, and Drew Pine, who was the starting quarterback all year, hit the transfer portal. And Marcus Freeman said, we were honest. We said, we're probably going to take a graduate transfer quarterback this offseason. Tyler Buckner, who was the starter over you, is healthy. This is the information. Make your decision. And then he pulled out before the bowl game, and people were a little bit stunned. But if you're going to go try and play elsewhere, you're not going to risk injury in this game. You've got your limited future to think about. And so it's a totally understandable move. I think it becomes even more, and you guys know this, for so often, bowl season, the three best words in CFP bowl, young guy scrimmage. Being an older guy on the roster, those days where they're going to turn it loose and have all the freshmen and redshirt guys and sophomores go out there and scrimmage so the coaches can get a look, was manna from heaven. It was music to your ears. Most of these games are now going to become young guy scrimmage, where it's less about finishing off this season on a positive note and more about correctly using the redshirts, those four games that you get for guys, and getting a good look in extended game rep action for the young players that are a part of your roster going into the next season.
Yeah. No, that's well said. Mike, thank you for fighting the gremlins over there technically and making some time for us today. We appreciate it, man. We'll try to talk to you next week.
Yeah, like I say, I'll try and have a sturdier connection, guys. We're all learning as we go here. The postseason's off to a rough start.
Nah, you're fine. You're fine. Mike Golic Jr., our buddy, Gojo Show. Check it out, the daily podcast. He's everywhere, talking a lot of football this time of year. College, pro, international. I'm talking about the World Cup. That kind of football.
Football.
Real football.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
By the way, we're about 35 minutes out from South Korea, Brazil. Big game. Big game. Big game.
Yeah,
you got to give Korea credit, man. The fact that they're even here, the fact that they made it to the knockout round, it's a big deal, man.
Was that an upset?
Yes.
I'm just asking. Look, man, don't act like that was a dumb question.
That was a dumb question.
Yeah, anytime like Japan or Korea or China's never even in it, but if they were, it'd be a huge, like anytime those guys, Australia. That was a huge upset for them to break.
Well, I know Australia, but like South Korea has been the most prominent of the Asian nations.
The fact that they came out of a group that contained Portugal, Uruguay, and Ghana, that's an accomplishment.
Yeah, Ghana has advanced, the last two World Cups they've
been in? Uruguay has been in the knockout
round. They've won it how many times?
And they're also
twice,
they're also
three times, four
fantastic.
Times?
I mean, look, man, they're
Portugal's
older.
An aging team. Did you see the picture of Pepe? Like, come on, man.
Dude, did you see,
Portugal
what,
wasn't winning,
did you see what CR7 just did this morning?
Yeah, he signed like a $200 million
deal. He's playing
deal
in Saudi Arabia.
Saudi
That's
Arabia.
The bad news. The good news is my dude is clearing $200 million a year.
Bro, it's LIV Golf, all but in one soccer player.
That's insane. Like, that's insane.
How much is Messi getting to go to Miami?
Like 50 or something.
Wow.
I mean, you know, even that is like, I mean.
He's not selling his soul, though. He's got that going for him.
Well.
But what is a soul really worth?
That's
$150 million. Depends whose soul it is, really.
I mean, Cristiano Ronaldo's soul? I mean, that dude sucks.
Yeah, very little. That guy's a flopper.
His abs, though? Different story. Shirtless?
I don't think
is his soul shirtless or clothed?
I don't think CR7 does, like, his. I don't think his dignity doesn't allow him to flop.
He
flops. He just stops.
That dude flops. He's always going down in the box, man. That guy's soft. Unlike Messi, who never goes down. Ever. You never see that dude take a fall. Ever.
Messi doesn't dive. That is true. Probably should dive a little bit more.
By the way, Roddy, I know that I told you before the World Cup that I was going to invite you to our office World Cup pool. That was rejected. I checked with the bosses, and they would not allow it.
What bosses? You're the boss.
Yeah, but you're a non-Learfield Audio employee.
What
so.
Is that? I mean, I get a checks.
Yo, what's I'm in the mean? Backyard right now. These chickens are bowing up on each other. Like, we're about to have, like, a hen fight.
That's awesome.
Holy cow.
You're doing the show from the backyard.
I'm in my office. I'm looking out over the backyard, and they are free-range chickens, okay? They're walking around, eating grass and bugs and stuff.
Yeah, he can sink them.
These ladies are about to bow up on each other. They're sisters. I mean, they all know each other. They're all relatives here.
Yeah, wow. But, you know, family fights. It's part of family.
Yes, they do.
Chicken fight.
Yes, they do.
It's like Louisville and Cincinnati fighting over Scott Satterfield.
Man, listen, Louisville getting Scott Satterfield out of the door is not a bad thing for them. Like, I mean, I'm curious, right? Like, you're ACC network guy. Like, do you think the Scott Satterfield experience has gone well?
No, but I don't think it's gone poorly, other than his flirtation with South Carolina.
Has he overachieved or underachieved?
He has achieved.
No, he had.
I don't know, man.
That guy hadn't done diddly.
He had a 9-win season his first
when
year.
When he first got there.
Sorry, 8-5. They were 8-5. They were 2-10 the year before. It's 4-7 in 2020, 6-7, 7-5. Like, I would say probably underachieved, but not significantly. Like, again, like, what is your expectations for Louisville?
I mean, they're middle of the pack for me. Like, they're in, like, the...
Which is where they've been.
They're probably in that third tier in the ACC, trying to get to the second tier. That's where Louisville is.
Yeah, and I guess the criticism would be that they didn't look like they were going to get to that second tier, which I wouldn't argue with. They were pretty solidly, I thought, what they were under Scott Satterfield. So, it'll be interesting to see who takes that job. Like, they're going to go after Jeff Brohm, but Jeff Brohm makes $5 million a year. And as far as I know, there's... There are two coaches that make $5 million a year in the ACC. Three. Mac Brown, Dabo Sweeney, and Mario Cristobal. That's it. So is Louisville going to pay $5 million a year for Jeff Brohm? He's going to have to give him a raise. Like, he's not going to take a hometown discount.
That's fair. By the way, since the last time we've done a show with you, we haven't had a chance to get your official on-the-record thoughts about Georgia Tech removing the interim tag from Brent Key, because a week ago at this time we were talking about Willie Fritz, but turns out Georgia Tech can't afford Willie Fritz, so he stayed at Tulane, said no thanks to going to Atlanta.
I don't actually think that Georgia Tech couldn't afford Willie.
They lowballed Willie Fritz.
So like, everything has a price that you're willing to pay for it, and sometimes people don't want to sell it for that price. Does that mean you can't afford a higher price? No, it just means you won't buy something at a higher price. Like, can I afford something that costs, you know, can I afford a jeans that cost $50? Yes, but jeans to me are worth 20, so I will pay 20 for jeans.
Okay, very good.
So like, Georgia Tech didn't want to pay what Willie Fritz wanted, reportedly. And some of that had to do with guaranteed money. Some of it may have had to do with guarantees elsewhere. It doesn't mean that Georgia Tech couldn't afford it. It meant the risk for what Georgia Tech was going to pay was not worth the potential reward for what Willie Fritz was going to bring, whereas those numbers met up for Brent Key. So in this situation, I don't think it's the case of Georgia Tech couldn't pay Willie Fritz or couldn't pay anybody. It's that they didn't want to saddle themselves with enough guaranteed money where if it didn't work, you're having to pay multiple coaches and handcuffing yourself in other areas. So I push back on that. And I don't think Brent Key was like the eighth choice.
I think clearly wasn't the top choice.
Which is fine.
it doesn't matter to me. Like, if you could go get an established Power Five head coach, that allows you to not have to worry about how will this person respond being in the chair. But if you can get a guy who's familiar with your institution, that removes the worry of how is this person going to function within the culture of my school.
Sure.
How many times have we seen established head coaches who may be able to run an organization but do not fit at the school? Brian Harsin being the number one example of that. Mm. This is Georgia Tech saying, hey, we'll take care of the other stuff while maybe taking a chance on a guy that hasn't been a head coach yet at the Power Five level. And I think based on there's relationships in Atlanta, based on where the ACC is, the floor is pretty high for this hire at Georgia Tech.
Okay. So
I'm 1,000% on board.
You're excited about the decision. Yeah. It was a popular pick with the players. Obviously. I mean, like, I saw the video, like, everybody was fired up in that facility. Well, yeah.
Look, that's the thing about, like, what we do. Like, hey, the players love it. Yeah, except for the ones that left.
Everybody's leaving. It doesn't matter whether you're winning games or losing games. Like, Alabama's
excited about a place that you a coach that you don't know. Like, I'm not like the Colorado players. You think they were excited about Deion Sanders? Well, he walks in and tells them all to get in the portal because he's bringing his bags and they're Louis. Like, I don't think you can take the players' perspective of this at all.
Here's the thing, though. Going down the line, Georgia, Michigan, TCU, Ohio State, there are guys on those teams who are going to hit the portal because they're not playing or because they're unhappy or maybe they got pitched something that isn't coming to fruition at any of those campuses or any of those programs. Like, I mean, at this point, unless you are a school like Arizona State or Colorado last year where you've got, 30 guys in the portal, who are all out the door. Like, that's a different story. But, man, free agency is here, man. All these guys are hitting the portal.
Yeah, I'm not saying that they're not. But like, I don't really – my whole point to that was, like, I don't – like, the players being excited is not a reason for me to be excited because the players don't know shit. So the reason I am excited is because Brent Key knows Georgia Tech. He knows recruiting in Atlanta. He's recruited Atlanta for forever. The head coaches in the state absolutely – they are big fans of his. Now, will that help him recruit the number one defensive end in the state? No, it won't. But it may help him recruit the 15th, who is thinking about going to South Florida and Georgia Tech isn't necessarily on the radar. It may help from that perspective. So I do think it helps. I'm excited about the fan base being engaged. We'll see if Jay Batt can fundraise off of it. I hope he can, because all of that would be good for Georgia Tech.
Non-conference schedule for Georgia Tech in 2023. You ready for this?
At Ole Miss.
Not ideal.
Bowling Green at home.
Bowling Green.
Bowling Green, that's fine.
You've lost to MAC schools before, recently.
Yeah, you shouldn't.
Georgia at home, although let's not kid ourselves, it'll be 95% red and black in there.
Okay, that's rude, and I resent that.
Yeah, I'm not wrong.
You are absolutely wrong. I will say that Georgia Tech plays Georgia better on the road than they do at home.
They're missing an opponent on here. I'm only seeing.
Yeah, they have
games.
An opening. They have an opening.
They have an open date?
Oh, they have an opening.
An open. Well, they need to go ahead and find, you know.
Well, they don't have to do it tomorrow. The season doesn't start for a while.
So. Well, just go out there and book, like, Kennesaw State right now. Like, just get something
Kennesaw
on the
State's
books.
About to be in Conference USA.
Oh, that's right. Dude, we are going to have to give a refresher. We got four schools going to the Big 12. Conference USA, the AAC, all that stuff's about to get thrown into the blender. It's going to be a challenge getting my arms around these new look conferences for 2023. But we got time. Like you said, we got time. We also got time to break down these playoff games. I got to be honest,
hold on,
man.
We didn't even talk about the coaching stuff that much.
No. I know. What else you want to talk about?
Well, first off, I want to give my piece on Deion Sanders because we talked about it a little bit with Mike, but I do want to like give a legitimate take on it. I want to get your perspective on it. So on the HBCU piece, like I think Jackson State has handled this with class and said basically thank you Deion Sanders, all this stuff. Jackson State and HBCUs were elevated temporarily by Deion Sanders, but I'm not sure that that's something that's going to sustain because it was such a short period of time. And he's going to ravage that Jackson State roster on the way out. He's taking all the best players and taking them with him to Colorado. So, like, net, like, is Jackson State better off than when Deion Sanders got there? I would say, yeah, probably. Facilities are better. He did improve those. He improved the visibility of Jackson State, and maybe they get more admissions out of it. But that football team's going to be terrible next year, I would guess, because those guys are going to transfer, especially the ones that had transferred that have opportunities elsewhere that were better than SWAC football. So I do have some, like, I think it's a complicated legacy that he leaves, because his commitment to HBCUs and his commitment to the SWAC was challenged while he was there, and he vehemently pushed back against that. And yet, as soon as the first thing smoking, literally smoking when it comes to Colorado, as soon as the first thing smoking showed up, he went and took it. And it's not like he took Georgia Tech. It's not like he took Florida State or USF, like something close. He took Colorado, a team that hasn't been relevant in two decades. And, like, the resources aren't there. The team, it just feels very much like whatever came up, he was going to go and do it. Secondly, and this is the football aspect of it, I think you will – okay, let me back up. Secondly, and this is the football aspect of it, the only reason that a coach at the level that he was at gets that coaching job is because he's Deion Sanders. And so I do think there's some legitimate football concerns, because his quarterback is going to transfer into the Pac-12 as, I believe, a fourth-year player. I think he's a junior this year. So he's going to transfer, and it's either his third or fourth year. And he's going from a conference where he was the best player in the conference, maybe the best player in all of – probably not all of FCS, but he was a very good player at the FCS level, certainly the best player in HBCU football. And that gave them a distinct advantage because he was the best quarterback in that conference as soon as he got there. He's going to walk in that established, and he's not going to be the best quarterback in the Pac-12. Travis Hunter's not going to be the best player in the Pac-12. All of those things were true at Jackson State, where, like, he brought a four-star quarterback who was a true freshman and automatically is the best quarterback. Like, the talent disparity that he had in a conference that over recent history has been the lesser of the two prominent HBCU conferences. The SWAC has been less than the MEAC. The talent disparity made coaching almost irrelevant. So it was about talent acquisition. He was able to do that at a high enough level where they just rolled people. He's not going to be able to do that at Colorado. You can recruit as well as Oregon has the past however many years, and you still got to coach. And that Oregon team still hasn't been able to get to the point where they can win, you know, where they can get through conference play undefeated, you know. And I'm not saying that that's where he needs to get to, but I think he's going to be severely tested in all of those realms, because, like, Utah's still going to roll in there and kick their ass. Like, they're still going to have to go to the Palouse. It's not like going to Alcorn or some of these other schools that they played in the SWAC.
Okay, let me ask you a question, because I hear everything you're saying, and you are eloquent in stating your case for and against the move. Couldn't I say that Deion going to Boulder is a safer job than going to a place where maybe the expectation is, hey, man, we should be winning 8 or 9 games a year? Like, Colorado went 1-11 this year. I mean, that is the worst Power 5 team in the country. And if you're Deion, yeah, I understand the cultural issues that might be in play and the questions, but, like, if the expectations are, well, we don't know how Deion's going to be as a Power 5 coach. We don't know how this is going to look at a non-HBCU. Going to a place like Colorado might be, you know, a more prudent decision, because...
That's fair.
You know, like, there's the other thing about Colorado. We'll say the quiet part out loud. Folks there in Boulder, I mean, they have moments. There are pockets when there's fan support. But for the most part, like... they do not care about college athletics.
And like, as soon as he signs that contract, he knows they're too poor to fire him. So he can do whatever he wants, and he gets almost unilateral power, to the point where he said, we may not have the same looking uniforms next year. Like, you can't change the look of the Colorado uniforms. You just can't. I won't allow it.
I'm intrigued by that, though. I mean, I'm kind of here for it. What are we thinking, Deion?
What? Why? Why?
What do you mean?
Yeah, I'm with Cerber here.
Think he's going to be able to sit down with Nike and have a say in what those things look like?
I think that Deion thinks he can have Ralphie not run out in front of the team. Like, that's the level of power I think he thinks.
And that's a problem, man. Yeah, Ralphie is one of the most beloved animals in the entire universe.
Need her.
Yeah, like, life on other planets, I don't care, as long as Ralphie is protected.
I believe.
But, like, black and gold, the black and gold Colorado uniforms are so perfect in every way.
We're not changing the school colors. We're just saying maybe they need a little bit of an upgrade. That's all.
What do they need to upgrade? What are you going to do? Add a bunch of stupid shit to it like the Falcons have on their uniforms?
Easy, buddy.
Like the Bengals had for 15 years, the way the Cardinals look in the NFL right now? You really trust these guys? Like, have you seen the Seattle Seahawks uniforms?
Yes.
Like, is that what you want? For the Colorado, because that's what happens when you tell Nike or Adidas or Under Armour, hey, like, have some fun with it. You wind up with stuff that looks like that, and it sucks. It sucks so hard. And teams that dress like that don't make it to the college football playoff.
Wow. I don't think the expectation is CFP or Pac-12 title for these guys. I think Deion is like, look, if I can
go
to... Because let's be realistic here, man. Like I know we're expanding this thing to 12 in a couple of years.
Yeah,
but
and
let's
USC's
be real.
fitting to leave. Like, yes. Colorado's going to have a shot in the Pac-12.
Okay, regardless of how you feel about that, I think Deion and his people are like, let's go to Boulder. Let's see what we can do in 2 to 4 years there. And if it works, maybe we can go to an ACC or SEC job.
I'm saying they could win the Pac-12.
No chance.
Colorado was in the championship game like 3 years ago.
That was a COVID year. That doesn't count.
They were in it like a couple years before that, too. They've been to it like twice in the last 10 years. They have to do is then win that game, and they're in the college football playoff once we expand.
They made
I
it in
see your train of thought here. I see where you're going.
They didn't make
going.
It in 2020.
Okay, sure? They were close in 2020. I knew they made it in 2016 or something like that.
The 2021 was the weird USC played in it against Oregon.
That's right, because Washington
Oregon
backed
didn't
out.
Make
yeah.
it because Washington got COVID.
But yeah, that
but
was
they did
the
make
Steven,
it in like 16,
what was his name?
I
Steven.
Mike McIntyre was there.
They had a quarterback that was pretty good at the time. Regardless, like they were right there, man. Like USC and UCLA are leaving the Pac-12.
Cepho Leofau.
But didn't Steven Montez, is that
Steven
the name I'm
Montez
thinking?
Steven Montez also
I think
played
he, I think season. He came in and won the game or won several games for him down the stretch.
Wow, that's a deep cut. The fact you remembered Steven Montez at least even a little
I bit. Watch Pac-12 football. I understand the rest of the country does not.
Get his
but
ass.
I like college football.
This
and
isn't
I watch the Pac-12.
This isn't about watching Pac-12 football. This is about you pulling out Steven Montez's name. That's like, I mean, hell, a few weeks ago, the College Game Day guys couldn't find Eric Dungy as a name, and he was the starter for Syracuse that year.
I'm a sicko, dude.
Ricky
I'm sick.
Stanzi Ricky Stanzi's backup.
Roddy, you've been on this show for several years. There's something wrong with us. There's something very, very wrong with us, all of us. Like, we all do stuff like this all the time. But what is egregious is what you're saying is that Deion can't go to Colorado and compete for a playoff because it's going to become much easier actually to compete for a playoff.
Yeah, but like look at the
in
Pac-12
the coming
right
years.
Now. Oregon and Washington have a significant head start in terms of a number of different things.
Okay, what's going to happen
Utah,
when Michael Penix leaves?
All Utah's been
already
doing
said
is
he's
kicking
back.
People's ass.
I know. In 2024, though, when we expand to 12 teams, he ain't going to be there. It's going to be Sam Huard, who has been unable to win the job from multiple different quarterbacks in Washington.
Come on, don't throw Sam Huard out. He's a sophomore, man. Like, he has been okay. He's fine.
And he'll start as a senior, maybe.
Yeah, maybe he will. Maybe he won't.
Get out of there.
Maybe he won't. They'll find somebody else. But I think you look at what Jake Dickert's doing at Washington State. You look at what Jed Fish is doing. You look at what Jonathan Smith is doing. Like, he's walking into a league that was the second deepest league in the country last year, and the deepest when you consider the top of the league. So I don't think it's a layup, even with USC and UCLA leaving, which degrades some of that depth. I don't think it's a layup. Like, he's going into a team into a league where if you go one game above 500 in the league, then you're 5-4, which means that to get to 8 wins, you got to be perfect in the non-conference. That's tough. And if he gets stuck at 7-5, like, you know, I don't know, man. I don't know.
I just think it's not going to be a layup. You're right, but I think every conference that he's going to walk into, he's going to walk into as Deion Sanders, which just kind of changes things a little bit.
Yeah, but it's different if you walk into that and if you walk into that conference and the place where your name resonates the most, which is where college football is the most important
as the Southeast,
in the South and Southeast. If it's closer, like, is the number one recruit in the country going to go to Boulder to go play for Dion? Maybe. Maybe
I think
Boy
is going to transfer. The one from 2021, he's
Travis
going.
Hunter?
He already kind of teased it. Did he announce it officially yet?
Yeah, I don't know. But Dion, according to social media, like, he's always with Dion. Like, Dion doesn't let him out of his sights. But like, will an average number one recruit in the country go do that?
I don't think they need every average number one recruit in the country to do that. I think they just need some top 100. I do. He will get some five stars.
Aren't we going to learn?
He already has.
Yeah, I was going to say, aren't we going to learn pretty quickly? Like, early signing day is coming up in like 3 weeks.
Yeah, he already flipped. He already flipped one dude.
Here's a four-star cornerback, right?
Like, he's going to get some guys.
Here's the deal, man. The dirty secret with the Pac-12 is there's only like four programs that actually recruit.
Right. UCLA don't even do it. I know they're leaving, but like, Chip Kelly doesn't
recruit.
So I
understand what you guys are saying, but he's doing this in a traditional way at a place where it's not going to work that quickly. Like, he can assemble a top 10 recruiting class this year, and they are all freshmen walking into the Pac-12, and they're going to get their ass kicked.
He's going to hit the portal,
Let's set an over under and let's take a bet, gentlemen. Let's put stakes on the line.
I
say over 15 transfer portal athletes come through.
Easily. I'm not saying that.
That's most of a starting lineup.
Okay.
I think that number needs to be closer to like 30.
It could be.
We act like everybody in the transfer portal is Caleb Williams and Jordan Addison. Most of them are Momo Sanogo. You know, like, good player.
Deep cut.
Good player.
That's all they need. They need good. They're going to the Pac-12. All they need is good.
But you
players.
Have to get
they
all
don't need
of
great
them.
Players.
All of them be that. Like,
Roddy,
know,
don't
man.
You? If you're Dion, Roddy, don't you need to go out and get some coordinators? Like, don't you need to get like an associate head coach or somebody who knows the region? I'm not saying that Colorado's a recruiting hotbed. I'm just saying you got to build this thing. You got to build this thing up around you. Like, you got to
get Mike Bobo. Make it happen, Colorado State.
100%. Yeah, you got to go get people around you that know the landscape. You got to go get people around you. You know, he's talked about personnel and scouting and all this stuff. All the stuff that he listed out, like, all that stuff costs money, and they can't even afford Dion yet at Colorado. So can they afford a top-shelf offensive defensive coordinator? Can they go out and afford a top-shelf personnel staff? And look, a lot of the recruiting that will happen – it basically happens through Dion's social media presence, which is genius. Like, that is a shortcut. But again, I question the quality of all of that stuff. When we've seen the transfer portal be successful in Michigan State, and then it craters the next year. So how can you, like, Jimbo Fisher assembled the greatest recruiting class known to man at the end of last season or last signing day, and he was 5-7 this year. I get that Dion's not walking into the SEC, but it's not like he's walking into a joke of a conference.
Yeah, but Roddy, I just got this doubt, this questioning that you have. There's just only one answer for it, and I think Dion would just say, "I'm coming,"
and bring in my bags and a Louis.
Did you like the whole every time at the end when he steps away from the podium though, and every time he says, "I'm coming," I'm like, "Oh God, he is." He's going to gut, like, they're all going to be gone. None of these guys are going to be in Colorado next year.
I'm just glad we get an excuse to crank Mark Johnson up on the blitz, because that guy, you have never heard Mark Johnson call a football game, Roddy. He's got the pipes of God.
Yeah, dude.
Mark Johnson does play-by-play for Colorado. This dude can call a game.
Right.
But Roddy, when they're 1-11, you don't get to hear it because they're terrible.
Roddy, you want a link? Yeah. You want a link, bro? I'll send you a link to the one game they won this year, and I bet Mark was on fire.
Hit me with that link. Yeah. Hit me with that link. What do you guys think of Hugh Freeze at Auburn?
I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah, he doesn't deserve to be talked about. Fuck him.
A more high-profile version of what we talked about with Brent Key at Georgia Tech, where you're not getting your number one choice, and you try to sell it, and this move to me doesn't make sense, but... it's Auburn, and Auburn does things that don't make sense. I mean, they
like
have
Luke
a...
Fickell. You like Luke Fickell going to Wisconsin, though, right?
I mean, that's an easy thing to like because that's going to work. That's going to go
Matt
very
Rule
well.
Matt Rule in Nebraska?
That, did another we talk about one. That? I've been telling you that Nebraska's back for about a decade now, Roddy. Every year you and I have been doing the show, I'm like, this is the year.
Yeah, and I feel like I need to go into like the... I feel like I have made this show on the... You know, I've been the Nebraska hater on this show, so I think
you have.
I'll continue doing that.
Yes.
I think one year Miami and Nebraska are going to make the college football playoff, and Stephen Hartzell's going to drop dead on the spot. Just get struck by lightning.
Yeah. I mean,
I've been trying so hard.
I'll be curious to see what Louisville does. I mean, there's still a lot of other, you know, hey, like Stanford, for example, like that's a tough job. What did you make of Trent Dilfer, Roddy?
I did not make anything of Trent Dilfer.
Dilfer is now the coach at UAB.
Here's the thing. There were a lot of people up in arms about that, and I do think there's like a whole conversation we had around how that happened and why. I don't really care, though, to be honest with you. I could not care less about Trent Dilfer going to UAB. I wish him the best. It seems like a nice guy. Yeah, high school coach. We just had an HBCU coach get a Power 5 job. We had a high school coach get a Group of 5 job. Like, who cares, man?
Yeah, I just you're UAB. Bill Clark told you in June that he wasn't coming back to be a coach. You had the longest time of anybody in terms of programs looking for a coach, and you went and got a dude who's coaching high school football at a private Catholic school in Nashville. That's what he went and got.
And he went viral like earlier in the high school football season too, like and kind of like a split opinion on the way he handled one of the kids on his team. Do you remember that?
Yeah, he like abused him. I mean,
I can't recall exactly what happened. I just remember seeing that like what maybe 3 or 4 months ago.
Yeah,
I don't know if he grabbed him by the face mask. I don't think it was like a Jimmy Lake thing, was it?
By high school. I mean, it was a high school game, but yeah, it was verbally berating him. Yeah. I don't know if he put his hands on him, but it didn't look good, like visually.
Didn't lay hands.
I don't know if he put the hands.
Well, on good. Him. He'll get about as much. He'll get about as much publicity at UAB as he did at wherever he was, high school. So that's no offense to UAB. It just is what it is.
It sounds like there's plenty of offense to be made at UAB.
Proud program that was and then wasn't and now is again.
Yeah, but here's the thing about UAB: they're not in Conference USA anymore. Like they're moving to the American. They've got facilities. They're in a talent-rich part of the country. Like, I don't think people expect UAB to make the move and then just be a middle-of-the-pack American team. Like, they're expected to be like what UCF is or has been.
Yeah, but it's not the Sun Belt, and the Sun Belt's about to take that mantle from the American. So get what you get now, you American.
Sun Belt's here to stay. We do not.
I'm not sure the Sun Belt was really here this year. Like we anointed the Sun Belt as a really good conference.
Troy, South Al, JMU, Coastal. We haven't even talked about App State.
That's the list. Coastal got boat race. I'm not sure Coastal was very good this year. I think Coastal was a product of a terrible Sun Belt.
Terrible Sun Belt.
Yes.
Wow.
That's a take.
It was it not?
I'm not willing to say that it was a terrible conference.
Bro.
No.
Okay. They had Troy was a good team. South Al was a good team. I saw those teams, two teams play each other. They were good teams. I think James Madison was a good team. I think Coastal was a decent
team.
I think somebody else had to win the rest of those games.
Okay.
Like Georgia Southern sucked. App State sucked. Georgia State sucked. Old Dominion sucked.
Well, some of
Southern
those teams
missed,
that
Louisiana,
sucked went and knocked
UL
off
Monroe,
Power 5
Texas
teams.
State, Arkansas
Old
State.
Dominion
no,
beats
I
Virginia
don't.
Tech. Marshall beats Notre Dame.
Virginia
App State
Tech,
beats Texas
on.
A&M. What? Did that not
Texas
happen?
Texas A&M? Come on.
Texas A&M beat LSU!
Okay. That's a whole transitive property thing, but like Texas A&M, not a good football
Notre
team.
Notre Dame beat Clemson. Notre Dame lost
Dame,
to Marshall.
Again, a transitive property thing.
Marshall
Notre
beat
Dame at
Clemson.
That time was a mess. Okay.
Roddy,
App
that's
State
a bad
six,
take, dude.
App
Put
State
it to
was
bed.
6-6. App State was 6-6 this year.
I know.
So is Texas State a good football team?
I mean, they were on that given day in San Marcos, yeah.
That's what I'm saying, because App State lost to Texas State. So if you're going to do that, if you're going to do that with App State beat Texas A&M, listen. Okay, let's go down the list of who beat App State.
Roddy. I know, it's a deep league, dude.
You're 4-8 Georgia Southern Eagles.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, they were 6-6.
Yeah, you don't just stroll into San Marcos. You don't just stroll into Statesboro. What's the problem?
Teams leave with Statesboro Blues all year long.
You'd think Virginia Tech would have learned by now, hey, man, we probably shouldn't be playing a road game in Norfolk, but they keep doing it, and they keep catching L's.
Yep. Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Probably the third best league in the country, bro.
Yeah, I'm with Serber here.
Me, personally, I'm going SEC, Pac-12, Sun Belt. That's my podium.
You better put some respect on the Big 12's name. Secondly, you better put some respect. What do you mean, why? There wasn't a bad team in the Big 12. Give me a bad team in the Big 12. You can't. That's what I thought.
Iowa State.
Iowa State had the best defense in the league.
West Virginia.
West Virginia, by God, was very close in every game. Look, this is how somebody has to win and lose these games. So someone's going to end up 5-7, Steven. It is what it is.
Yeah, that's great.
Kansas thrived in the Big 12 this year. The Big 12 sucks, dude.
Thrived. Kansas was 6-6. They were 3-6 in the league. They didn't thrive in the Big 12.
What did Oklahoma finish at this year?
They thrived with the win over Duke.
7-5? 6-6? What about Oklahoma State?
Oklahoma.
What about Oklahoma State?
What? Oklahoma gets the right to get their ass kicked by Florida State in a bowl game. That's not going to go well.
Big 12 ain't all that, dude. I mean, TCU is pretty good and underrated, in my opinion.
The Big
12
do not go off of the records of the teams. Like you said, you actually watch.
We don't get
football.
To count UCF
you have to
this
actually,
year, bro.
You have to actually watch Big 12 football. Watch what Baylor does and the dudes that they have. Watch what
I'm
Oklahoma
very,
State
I'm
does
very aware of
have.
6-6 Baylor. They're a property in which I run their radio stuff.
Server's a pretty big deal in Waco.
Watch Horn Frog.
Put some respect on
his name. Watch TCU. Watch West Virginia. It's a league of good football teams.
TCU play and Kansas State are the only good teams in that
Texas
conference.
Is a good team.
No, until Quinn Ewers gets hurt.
Okay, how come 6-6 Oklahoma is bad, but 6-6 App State is good?
Because, man, it's just different on the mountain.
It's different on the mountain. You heard him. You heard
6-6 Georgia Southern is acceptable because you don't just stroll into Statesboro.
That's right, dude. They played a hell of a schedule too,
Roddy. You know what it's like in Statesboro,
Georgia
man. There's
Southern,
mosquitoes. There's
Georgia
mosquitoes
did
the size
not play
of
a hell of a schedule.
There,
why did how did Georgia Southern play a hell of a schedule?
I'm gonna look
Nebraska
up West Virginia's
and
real
UAB.
Quick. Yeah, I don't know, man.
West Virginia had the backyard
brawl. That's a tough schedule, bro.
Hey, Neil Brown. Oh, you just finished your third losing season in 4 years. You want to come back for another one? Great. That's West Virginia.
Because they ain't got no money, dog.
Tragic.
They lost to Pitt.
Got no
Kansas.
Because one does not simply stroll into Acrisure Stadium. They were confused.
Acrisure.
Like I thought we were going to.
Well, you know it's
Acrisure. Heinz Field.
You know it's the toughest place to play in the whole country.
How many games did you do at Acrisure this year, Roddy? Like six.
Three or four.
Yeah, unbelievable, man. All right, well, listen, we've got to wrap the show because Serber and I have to do another show. Just the two of us. We've got Michael Felder stopping by. We got to do a little hand in the dirt. In fact, Felder's
What's up,
actually
Felder?
Hopped Making on.
Is he on?
Yeah.
He's
here.
I'm here.
Felder.
He's off mic, but he's here.
How you doing?
Great, man. How are you?
I'm good. I hated I didn't get to see you, but I was in Chicago on Friday, and I got home late.
Oh man, yeah, it would have been cool. I feel like we should do another show with Felder here now.
We can certainly schedule that, but right now we're double booked.
Is he in the dirt that you guys are going into?
Yes. Give me five, Roddy. What do you think about the I don't know what you said. So here's what I'll do. Everybody already heard what you said about the playoff. They already heard that on this show.
Yep.
I'm going to tell. They don't have to wait till Friday to hear what I think. I like it. I think they've got three superpower teams in terms of ratings, and you give everybody else that complains all the time, you give them a Cinderella. What do you think about that?
We actually didn't talk about this at all on the show.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think they got it right. And I do think there is a measure of like Georgia, hey, would you rather face USC or Ohio State? Georgia would have rather faced USC because Ohio State has a level of talent that Georgia you would just rather not face the more talented team.
Absolutely.
But I think the TCU story is a great story. And I think there is equal interest for me in a scenario where Clemson is a 3 seed in this thing because it's a 12-team playoff and it's the top four conference champion. So I think they got it right. I think that I am interested to see how it is in the future. I got no problems with it.
There you go. I'm going to mute myself. I didn't mean to hijack the show, Hartz.
No, I love it, Felder. Welcome in.
No, Felder, you can hijack my shows anytime, buddy. You're always welcome.
Go do your thing, my man. I'll talk to you in a second.
Okay. Yes. By the way, Felder and Serber and I do a show. It's called Hand in the Dirt. It's a gardening podcast about football, but I mean, really.
Which, by the way, just talking about the gardening stuff, my wife, we haven't talked about this. Jackie, big into the plants, and just a massive plant person. We had to move all of our plants because they're all tropical plants. We had to move them all inside. So currently in my office right now, I've got 3 elephant ear plants in the office behind me right now. We have a banana tree downstairs in our sunroom.
Oh my God.
We have 2 birds of paradise that are in the sunroom as well. So like I live in a tropical like plant wonderland right now.
What's the insect situation like? You guys okay? Is that causing any issues?
It's a great question.
Yeah.
So when we brought the plants in, we brought them in like a month and a half ago. We had to go through. There were some bug issues.
Yeah.
There were some bug issues.
Because they're in there. They live in it. You know, they live in the soil. They live in the plant. We've had
a random like worm pop up every now and again.
Mm-hmm.
But generally, Jackie's done a good job. We had to prune a bunch of leaves. We had to do some damage control. But yeah, it's fine. No major insects. Major insect issues.
That's the only downside to what you're doing. And it sounds like you guys knocked it out of the park.
Well, I didn't knock anything out of the park. I don't do that. I water the elephant ears that are in here.
Do you still have the avocado plants or?
Oh, I didn't tell you guys about the avocado plants. No, Pepper ate my avocado. The coonhound. She ate the avocado plants.
What?
So our dogs, for whatever reason, our dogs are the worst. They get sick and they eat the plants.
Yeah. And
so this is in the show. This is in the show.
Yeah,
I think they kind of don't, like they kind of know now not to eat the ones in the sunroom. But Pepper, yeah, she had a stomach ache one day and ate like, it had like 5 leaves. She ate all the leaves off the avocado plant and never recovered.
I feel your pain. I'm always getting after Mona.
Roddy, what's your afternoon look like?
I am free for the rest of the afternoon. I'm going to watch some World Cup. I've got to help the girls write their Christmas lists, but that's about it.
Hartzell, wrap this show up, and then, Roddy, can you spend 10 minutes with us?
Of course. Yeah. All right, let's do it. Absolutely.
Folks, that's the show.